Alagadu from Sutta, this discourse appears in middle and sayings, the snake simile. Thus have I heard, once the Blessed One lived at Savatthi in Jetha's grove in Anathavindika's monastery. Now on that occasion, a monk called Aritha, formerly of the vulture killers, had conceived this pernicious view. There are things called obstructions by the Blessed One. As I understand this teaching, those things are not necessarily obstructive for the one who pursues them. So these obstructions were things about the sensual desires. So he is thinking that these obstructions are not necessarily obstructive. So it's okay to have them, and but you can continue. The commentary sort of saying that if a householder can attain, you know, the stream mentor and all those things with the six sense pleasures, why wouldn't we? Yeah, sort of. Several monks, hearing about it, went to the monk Aritha, formerly of the vulture killers, and asked him, "Is it true, friend Aritha, that you have conceived this pernicious view? There are things called obstructions by the Blessed One. As I understand his teachings, those things are not necessarily obstructive for one who pursues them." "Yes, indeed, friends, I do hold that view." Then those monks, wishing to dissuade Aritha from that pernicious view, urged, admonished, questioned, and exhorted him thus: "Do not say so, friend Aritha. Do not say so. Do not misrepresent the Blessed One. It is not right to misrepresent him. Never would the Blessed One speak like that. For in many ways, indeed, as the Blessed One said of those obstructive things, that they are obstructions, indeed, and that they necessarily obstruct him who pursues them. Sense desires, so he has said, bring little enjoyment and much suffering and disappointment. The perils in them are greater, since sense desires are like bare bones, as the Blessed One said. They are like a lump of flesh, like a torch of straw, like a pit of burning coal, like a dream, like borrowed goods, like a fruit-bearing tree, like a slaughterhouse, like a stack of swords, like a snake's head, are sense desires, as the Blessed One said. They bring little enjoyment and much suffering and disappointment. The peril in them are greater." So Buddha mentioned this, the explanation of those terms in Potaliya Sutta, middle end saying that Buddha was comparing this sensual desire to bones, a fleshless bone. So if one would give a fleshless bone to a dog, it will keep on biting, but it won't get any satisfaction, and it's only its own teeth, you know, biting and become blood coming out of that, and that's the only thing happening. So dog won't get anything like that, this sensual desires. Like that, no satisfaction in that. And then the other example was about the lump of flesh. If someone, a bird, a hawk, for example, take piece of flesh and fly, and when the other bird see that one, then that the other bird is trying to get this flesh. So unless that bird give it up, then that bird will meet with death, because that others will kill that bird. And the other one is the like a torch of straw. If you have a burning, you know, those pandan type thing, that burning thing, grass burning torch, and if it is, you are carrying it against the wind, so wind will blow, so the hand will be burnt unless you give it up. And then like a pit of burning coals, that if someone wants to live, and there is a burning coal, pit of burning coal, and two men will grab this man by hand and try to push to that thing, and then he wants to live. So sensual desires are like that. And it's like a dream, like borrowed goods, like fruit-bearing tree in the slaughterhouse. You can see this in the Potaliya Sutta. So they produce much suffering and disappointment. I mean, it is true, isn't it? Because of the sensual desires that we, you know, we go for these things and, you know, working and all those things, all due to sensual desires. And basically we are born here because of the sensual desire, and much suffering with the cold, heat and all those things are also consequences. Yet though the monk Aritta was thus urged, admonished, questioned and exhorted by those monks, he still clung tenaciously and obstinately to his pernicious views, saying, "There are things called obstructions by the Blessed One. As I understand his teaching, those things are not necessarily obstructive for one who pursues." So when those monks could not dissuade the monk Aritta, formerly of the vulture killers, from his pernicious view, they went to the Blessed One, and after respectfully saluting him, they sat down at one side. Being seated, they told the Blessed One all that happened, and they said, "Since, O Lord, we could not dissuade the monk Aritta from his pernicious view, we have now reported this matter to the Blessed One." Then the Blessed One addressed a certain monk and asked that monk to go and call that monk, that master calls you. And so this, the Venerable Aritta came there, and then Buddha asked, "Is it true, Aritta, that you have conceived this pernicious view? There are things called obstructions by the Blessed One. As I understand his teaching, those things are not necessarily obstructive for whom he pursues." So he said, "Yes." And then Buddha asked, "Of whom do you know, foolish man, that I have taught to him the teaching in that manner? Did I not, foolish man, speak in many ways of those obstructive things, that they are obstructions indeed, and that they necessarily obstruct him who pursues them? Since desires, so I have said, bring little enjoyment and much suffering and disappointment. The peril in them are greater." So Buddha was repeating the same thing, that sense desire like bare bones and so on. And Buddha said, "But you, foolish man, have misrepresented us by what you personally have wrongly grasped. You have undermined your own future and have created much demerit. This foolish man will bring you much harm and suffering for a long time." Then the Blessed One addressed the monks thus, "What do you think, O monk? Has that monk Aritta, formerly of the vulture killers, produced any spark of understanding in this teaching and discipline? How should that be, Lord? Certainly not, Lord." After these words, the monk Aritta, formerly of the vulture killers, sat silent, confused, with his shoulders drooping and his head bent, brooding and incapable of making rejoinder. Then the Blessed One, knowing his condition, spoke to him, "You will be known, foolish man, by what is your own pernicious view. I shall now question the monk about this." Actually, it is true, isn't it? Because that we also read this discourse after 2600 years, and that one is known for that. Then the Blessed One addressed the monk, "Do you, O monks, also understand the teaching proclaimed by me in the same manner as this monk Aritta does, who misrepresents us by what he personally has wrongly grasped, who has undermined his own future and created much demerit?" "Certainly not, Lord, for in many ways has the Blessed One told us of those obstructive things that are obstructions indeed, and that they necessarily obstruct him who pursues them. Good monks, it is good that you thus understand the teaching proclaimed by me, for in many ways I spoken of those obstructive things, that they are obstructions indeed, and that they necessarily obstruct him who pursues them. Sense desire, so I have said, they bring little enjoyment and much suffering and disappointment. The peril in them are greater. Sense desires are like a bare bones, have I said. They are like a lump of flesh, like a torch of straw, like a pit of burning coal, like a dream, like a borrowed goods, like a fruit-bearing tree, like a slaughterhouse, like a stake of swords, like snake's head, are sense desires. Thus have I said. They bring much suffering and disappointment. The peril in them are greater. But this monk Aritta, formerly of the vulture killers, misrepresents us by what he personally has wrongly grasped. he undermines his own future and creates much demerits. This will bring to this foolish man much harm and suffering for a long time. Monk, it is impossible indeed that one can pursue sense gratification without sensual desire, without perception of sensual desire, without thought of sensual desire. So one cannot have this gratification if this is this kama sanya, and then the kama vitakka, you know, thinking about these sensual things. Without doing that one cannot have gratification. So to get the gratification, one got to have those things. And there are here, O monks, some foolish men who study the teachings. Having studied it, they do not wisely examine the purpose of these those teachings. To those who do not wisely examine the purpose, these teachings will not yield insight. They study the teachings only to use it for criticizing or refuting others in disputation, just to have the knowledge. Buddha said in one discourse, this Buddhism is not for advantage of knowledge. It is for the liberation of the mind. They do not experience the true purpose for which they study the teaching. To them, these teachings, wrongly grasped, will bring harm and suffering for a long time. And why? Because of their wrong grasp of the teaching. So if we take things wrongly about the teaching, then it doesn't produce result. Suppose once a man wants a snake, looks for a snake, goes in search of a snake. He then sees a large snake, and when he is grasping its body or its tail, the snake turns back on him and bites his hand or arm or some other limb of his. And because of that, he suffers death or deadly pain. And why? Because of his wrong grasp of the snake. If you hold on the tail, you know, the snake will bite. Similarly, O monk, here are some foolish men who study the teaching. Having studied it, they do not wisely examine the purpose of those teachings. To those who do not wisely examine the purpose, these teachings will not yield insight. They study the teaching only to use it for criticizing or for refuting others in disputation. I mean, there are so many people do this sort of thing. Some people study Abhidhamma, for example, for the sake of studying and arguing. I have met some people like that, not to learn these things.
Now, for our benefit, what sort of things we should do? Because in one hand, we need to learn and understand what is the Dhamma. Mm. And in the second, the other hand, we need to practice those two. Is that the way, or it is different?
Well, you need to practice, you need to learn it and practice it. But that learning, purpose of the learning is to attain Nibbana, for the liberation of the mind, not to argue or anything like that. So not to put myself in the front line. And that's one thing. And just to say that I know this Dhamma, that I know that one, and then have conceit, for example, that one, it's wrong. And so Buddha, later on you can see, is the Buddha is teaching this one as a raft, similar to a raft, that you just want to cross. Mm. That's why we are learning this thing.
Yeah, that means we need to read and understand and learn this thing, but it is just for get out of this
this thing. Yeah, but if you try to carry it further beyond, then that means you cannot attain.
But you have to carry it within yourself until you
the raft. You can't, you know, just when you're crossing the flood with the raft, I don't want this raft, and you can't break it. The dhyana is something like that on as well. So you have this concentration. And then if you think, clinging to dhyana is not good, therefore I give up this dhyana, then you don't cross this thing. Buddha said, similarly, among there are some foolish men who study the teaching. Having studied it, they do not wisely examine. So if they do not do it, then will not lead the...
Here, this wisely examining the bhavana, or it is the realization itself?
Well, if you take a sort of a sentence, for example, you need to sort of try to see what Buddha What is the message Buddha tried to convey here? This discourse itself is really good in that sense. Now we are talking about the sensual desire, right? At the beginning, that was the view. And then later on you can see Buddha is talking about views. And then why, what's the connection, if you are not examining, what's the connection between the view and the sensual desire, then you don't get it. So wisely examining means that you need to try to connect these dots, from this dot, that one. That's why Buddha said this one, that's one thing. Could there be other meanings? And Buddha said, for example, for one thing about the clinging to form. Did Buddha meant only the clinging to form at that time? Or Buddha did he, the meaning is that about the five aggregates rather than that one? So, Petakopadesa, for example, explained that there are things like that. One has to see this Dhamma. If the Buddha has said it in a greater detail, then it is different. I mean, if it is short, then one don't need to examine with the other context as well to get the proper meaning. And there has been some arguments between a monk and a Buddhist lay follower. One is saying that there are three kind of feelings. And then the lay follower is saying, no, there are only two kind of feelings. And so there was an argument. And then they went to the Buddha. And so Buddha instructed monks that, yes, I have declared two kind of feeling, and I have declared the three kind of feeling. So both are correct. And but they are fighting without, they are not trying to understand what each other is saying, but they are simply going by that word and saying what it is. And if you go by the Venerable Sariputta style, when someone says something, Venerable Sariputta re-questions that person, is that this included in this one or sort of thing. Yeah, so there's this techniques that one has
so
to
So that
apply.
Means it's not use of putting one's view in there, because you have to see
exactly
what Lord Buddha has said.
Yes.
Otherwise you are going to...
Yeah.
Otherwise you don't understand at any day at all.
Yeah, that's what Buddha said over here. If you don't do it, then we don't see it. That's why when you are reading a discourse, one has to carefully go by paragraph by paragraph. Maybe you are spending half a day for one paragraph. That's okay. That produces quite a lot of results. It's not every paragraph actually helping you, because you don't understand every paragraph. But there is a couple of paragraphs that is so good, you understand, you think and ponder about it more and more, you understand more and more.
If it is properly translated, I think every single word has its weight.
Its weight, yes. Buddha is not using words just uselessly, yes. Says every word. So Buddha said that they do not experience true purpose which they or to study the teaching. To them, this teaching wrongly grasped will bring harm and suffering for a long time. And why? Because of their wrong grasp of the teaching. And this is what is happening today, quite a lot, wrong grasp of the teaching. But there are here, among some noble sons who study the teaching, and having studied it, they examine wisely the purpose of those teachings. To those who wisely examine the purpose, these teachings will lead insight. They do not study the teachings for the sake of criticizing, nor for refuting others in disputation. They experience the purpose for which they study the teaching, and to them, these teachings, being rightly grasped, will produce welfare and happiness for a long time. And why? Because of their right grasp of the teaching. Suppose once a man wants a snake, looks for a snake, goes in search of a snake. He then sees a large snake, and with a forked stick, he holds it firmly down. Having done so, he catches it firmly by the neck. Then although the snake might entwine with coils of its body that man's hand or arm or some other limbs of his, still he does not on the account of suffer death or deadly pain. And why not? Because of his right grasp of the snake. Similarly, O monk, there are here some noble sons who study teaching, and having learned, they examine wisely the purpose of those teachings. To those who wisely examine the purpose, these teachings will yield insight. They do not study the teaching for criticizing, refuting others. They experience the purpose for which they study the teaching, and then these teachings will grasp, rightly grasp, will bring welfare and happiness for a long time. And why? Because of their right grasp of the teaching. For example, if someone is actually thinking whether they are be born in the next one after death, whether there is any, you know, birth or not. But for that man, having spent quite a lot of time thinking whether whether there is a life after death or not, well, he'll pass away. But if you examine that this is suffering, this is the cause of suffering, this is the cessation of suffering, and then he can attain. So therefore, monks, if you want the purpose of what I have said, you should keep it in mind accordingly, if you know the purpose. But if you do not know the purpose of what I have said, you should question me about it, or else ask those monks who are wise. So that's the answer. I shall show you, monks, the teachings similitude to a raft, as having the purpose of crossing over, not the purpose of being clung to. Listen, monks, and heed well what I shall say. Yes, Lord, replied the monks, and the blessed one spoke thus. Suppose, monks, there is a man journeying on a road, and he sees a vast expanse of water, of which this shore is perilous and fearful, while the other shore is safe and free from danger. But there is no boat for crossing, nor is there a bridge for going over from this side to the other. So the man thinks, this is the vast expanse of water, and this shore is perilous and fearful, but the other shore is safe and free from danger. There is, however, no boat here for crossing, nor a bridge for going over from this side to the other. Suppose I gather reeds, sticks, branches, foliage, and bind them into a raft. Now that man collects reeds, sticks, branches, foliage, and binds them into a raft, carried by that raft, laboring with hands and feet, he safely crosses over to the other shore. Having crossed and arrived at the other shore, he thinks, this raft indeed has been very helpful to me. Carried by it, laboring with hands and feet, I go get safely across to the other shore. Should I not lift this raft on my head or put it on my shoulder and go where I like? What do you think about it, O monks? Will this man, by acting thus, do what should be done with the raft? No, Lord. How then, monks, would he be doing what ought to be done with the raft? Here, monks, having got across and arrived at the other shore, the man thinks, this raft indeed has been very helpful to me. Carried by it, laboring with hands and feet, I got safely across to the other shore. Should I not pull it up now to the dry land, or let it float in the water, and then go as I please? By acting thus, monk, would that man do what should be done with the raft? So it's the same thing. If we are actually developing dhyana concentration, for example, what's the purpose of the dhyana concentration? It's just to cross these things. And having developed that one, one should not be clinging to that one and holding it. And so that you won't be going to the further shore or attain Nibbana. In the same way, monk, I have shown to you the teaching similitude to a raft, as having the purpose of crossing over, not the purpose of being clung to. You, O monk, who understand the teaching similar to a raft, you should let go even good teachings. How much more false ones? Not only the false ones, even the good teachings has to let go. The Kusala Sila, for example, you know, the virtue part, also gone out with the liberation. So, they are good ones. And grounds for views. There are monks, these six grounds for false views. What are the six? There is here, monks, an uninstructed worldling, who has no regard for noble ones, who is ignorant of their teaching and untrained in it, who has no regard for men of worth, who is ignorant of their teaching and untrained in it. He considers the corporeality, that is the form, as this is mine, this I am, this is myself. So similarly for the feeling, perception, volitional formation and consciousness. All those things that he regards as the as self, that these are mine, this I am. And for that what is seen, heard, sensed, thought, what is encountered and pursued in mind, this also he considers thus, this is mine, this I am, this is myself. And so that you can see the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and the mind, so whatever thing that he pursues, He regards these things as mine. And also this ground for view. So there are, you can see there are five things about the matter, feeling, perception, original formation and consciousness, regarding them as mine. So there are five views, right? And then the last one is the universe is the self, that I shall be after death, permanent, stable, eternal, immutable, eternally the same, shall I abide in that very condition. That view too he considers thus, this is mine, this I am, this is myself. So you can see that if someone, then the last one is sort of someone develop kasina meditation, for example, patavi, so having developed it to a certain level, all the other views can come up from that one as well. You develop it to a certain level and then you see that the whole thing is sort of finite. I see the world as a finite thing. So there's this form. At that time there's a perception, these views, mostly these views are coming to a person who actually developed the mind, trying to develop the mind. Today we can see there are scientists, that there are ordinary people. So scientists are developing certain things, the ordinary people just, listen to them and think that what he is actually telling, that is the truth. They don't put any effort to learn or know these things. Likewise, that people do meditation. So when there is no Buddha, there is this lack of knowledge. And people think that they, after meditating, so they are thinking about, remember the last week discussion about the Pottapada Sutta, about the perception, and then they perceive something and they think, okay, I see the world as a finite thing. And then going beyond that one, so one would go into the space is infinite level. So I would say the self is infinite, that form is infinite. So there is this I myself perceive as a infinite thing. So those views come to arise.
Yeah, but I still can't understand this thing was there earlier too. Why now, if people listen to Dhamma and Lord Buddha has clearly said about the things, why still they want to cling to these things?
Because they have not understood it. They have not understood, although Buddha said it, we still cling to certain things without knowing. On the surface, that one would actually see, yes, okay, these things produce this sort of thing. But not really knowing. You see, probably...
That looks like lack of trust. Is
that right? Shraddha is the main thing,
yeah.
Yes. But the Shraddha, how do you arrive at Shraddha? You get the faith by understanding Dhamma itself. So, you see that if you look at, let's say, you look at certain thing, a person, right? Probably one would be sort of thinking, this person is beautiful and so on and sort of thing. And then probably having heard what Buddha said about this, about the form, you would get some sort of a thing about, that person is going to die and will die and sort of thing is the same, right? So there's something slight understanding over there. But we need to come to the things like colors, for example. One may not be perceiving in that way. The color of a person. It's not that actually the color of a person may have led to a situation about the color. If someone has never meditated about the color, then that I'm go with the color, not with that person. So the person is dying, all those things, that's fine. But I'm grasping to the color. So that's why that the Anuttara Purusa Dhamma Sarathi part, the one we discussed before in Mahanidana Sutta, you can see that Buddha is sending us to eight directions. Having perceived this particular form, one would make the whole world in a different color, like blue or yellow or whatever thing it is, and then he go beyond that. So it's just a matter. So it's to the extent that we have meditated and pursued things, there are things we have not done the meditation and haven't mastered. Those things take hold of that one. It is true that although people hear these things and meditate upon them, but when you go into higher concentration, one would sort of think, well, this is good. Space is infinite, sort of perception is infinite level. You can see that this is sort of stable.
So, because at that time, that person is not skilled enough to get the Dhamma out of
that. Exactly, about that thing. Mm-hmm. He is capable of analyzing the material things over here, the human forms and things like that. But he is not capable of understanding that sort of a perception, that sort of living in that world. He cannot see the end of it. So there he thinks that when I be born there, I'm stable, permanent. And I live for a long time. That perception comes. If, unless you are a true Buddhist, that you have, if you remember what Buddha said, it's very easy at that particular time, first for you to grasp that concept about that world and be happy about that world and feel like living in that world. And unless you are mindful, unless you remember Buddha's word, that this is also impermanent. And most beings who are born here will be born after death, will go to hell, animal realm and sort of thing. Because this is some sort of achievement you got. This is like in this birth itself, it's a lifetime achievement. You got a really good place. And then that dhyana concentration that you got, I'm talking about spaces in finite level. So you struggle to arrive at that one and you understand it, this sort of thing. But you do not understand beyond that. But Buddha understood the beyond that. So if that word is not coming up, well, one would go to that level. So there are these six views. So one would sort of need to question back, what's the purpose of this? What's the connection to the previous one? We were talking about sensual desire, right? And Aritta had this sensual desire about this view. Now Buddha is talking about views. Unless we examine what's the connection between the two, you wouldn't actually see. So Buddha is now giving over here certain things that they are this, that this is mine, who is actually thinking that the matter is mine, feeling is mine, perception is mine, that's what it is saying. So there's a huge connection between the sensual desire and these views. We remember that we discussed this one to a greater detail in when you were talking about the Sabbaso Sutra, that we had a diagram like this, and that that starting with the physical nutriment and this sensual desire is coming to arise, and having got that one, then we get this contact. So I pursue the same thing. Let's say I pursue certain, I have eaten something, food, or I have seen some person I like. So you can see that, let's say if I take the food example, that I have eaten, and I know the taste of it, I know the feeling that I am getting. So I pursue its color and so on. And then now one day I see the same food on a table, similar food on some other table in some other house. So at that time you can see that our volitional formation, since I have eaten it before and I pursued it before, I felt it before, now it's construct this thing. It's construct condition form as form. So it's construct this food as the food that you have eaten, although you have not eaten this one. It's construct the condition feeling as feeling. It construct the condition perception as perception. And this is when the feeling comes in, and this is the food that you ate, this is the feeling you had at that time. So all those things are coming up. So you can see there is this food, and there is this eye, and then this eye contacts, and there is this mental old thing coming up now. So we pursue the feeling as pleasurable. So there is this perception. Because of the perception, there is this volition, chetana, come to arise. When we get this volition at that time, because I have done it before, it is now constructed, this is mine. It is something I eat, it is something mine. Right? So that that time he regards these things as mine. So if you have this regarding to the internal, that is for my body, that is one is going to this I making, I am. So that's one way. The other one is if you have that thing for external, so like the food is now external, so there is this mind making, this is mine. So two views. from the volition. It's happening from this mental volition part that coming through this line over here and then going through the, this ditti views. We discussed this one in Sabbasava Sutra. And over there also Buddha mentioned the, those six views are the ones coming that he by self I am aware of self, by self am I not aware of self, and all those views. So they all come into the same thing, same bundle. So you can see the sensual desire is the one that created these views. Internal, one view, external, another view. So those two views make this atta. But monks, there is here a well-instructed noble disciple who has regard for noble ones, who knows their teaching and is well-trained in it, who has regard for men of worth, who knows their teaching and is well-trained in it. He does not consider the form in this way. This is mine. This I am. This is myself. He does not consider feeling, perception, volitional formation and consciousness. This is mine. This I am. This is myself. And similarly, having seen something, he is not regarding them as mine. And also this ground for this view, holding the universe is the self, that I shall be after death, permanent, stable, internal, immutable, eternal. So the having gone into the meditation, then don't go into those states where this is mine, this is it. He does not consider that this is mine, this I am, this is myself. So, considering thus, he is not anxious about unrealities. Why unrealities? Because all of them are constructed. Remember that when I see a food, it is also constructed in my mind. And such a thing. I am actually labeling it and constructing. So you can see why we are anxious. If we take materiality as self, and then we get agitated, you know, because of the, if I take stock market or value something, right? And if I hold it and the stock market goes down, then I get upset, right? So if we hold to our jobs and then they are slashing jobs, you can see how we are getting affected. But if we are not considering these things as mine, let's say there is a chair and it is getting broken and all those things, I don't care. Even for this particular form, the body. So when this was said, a certain monk asked the Blessed One, Lord, can there be anxiety about unrealities in the external? There can be, O monk, said the Blessed One. In that case, monk, someone thinks, oh, I had it, that alas, I have no longer. Oh, may I have it again, but alas, I do not get it. Hence he grieves, he depressed and laments, beats his breast, he weeps, and dejection befalls him. Thus, monk, is there anxiety about unrealities in the external? I mean, this thing has to be. There is another discourse about this as well. Buddha is asking us to actually examine and see that why we get this sokaparadeva, the sorrow, lamentation, pain, and all those things. One should examine. And over there also, Buddha said that it is because that we regard this. The person who does not know about Buddha, does not heard about the monk, you know, the arahants and so on, they would regard this particular thing as mine, form as mine. And that form alters, change with the alteration of the form, because his mind is preoccupied with the form and now he is upset about it. So that's the, if you are doing the contemplation about this dukkha, the birth is suffering, aging is suffering, sickness is suffering, death is suffering, and one would need to look at the other part, the sorrow, lamentation, pain and all those things. Why am I getting those things? Every one of us has got that all the time. Only the arahants who doesn't have that thing. All the others got it. So one would see why I have. So rather than just skipping through the, you know, the discourse part, each time when you read it, and you need to examine, do I have this problem? And you should be able to find many thousands of examples.
Is that because of the clinging? Or these
clinging, yeah. Clinging and holding as mine. And Buddha is asking later on in this discourse, and those grass and all those things outside, when people are taking it, do you get upset about it? You don't. They don't, because they are not mine. At the end, would they sell in that?
And again, it's like a chain actually, because it's not only the clinging that in this birth item, because the previous karma also play a big part.
Previous karma plays a big part, and also in this birth, that whatever thing we perceived before, that food example. Unless you have not eaten that food, unless you have, do not know that this, you know, how tasty it is, there could be in the plate or somewhere on the table. You don't even think about it, you just look at something else. Since you have done it before, so you have these habits developed. Whenever we see, then the whole packet is coming up with that. So that's why people can't actually resist at that time. So how many eons we have developed such and such thing to, you know, grasp these things and hold it as mine.
And not knowing that it is a pain, that people take it as a happiness.
Yes. But Lord, can there be absence of anxiety about unreal deeds in the external? There can be, O monk, said the Blessed One. In that case, monk, someone does not think thus, oh, I had it, that alas, I have no longer. About the fast things that you had, for example, the feeling, fast feeling, feelings that you had when you are young, and so on, right? Things, you know, some people even, you know, having come to Australia, for example, think about the Sri Lanka, I was in such and such a place, such a beautiful place, and sort of thing, I miss it, right? So that's what people say. So that's also, if we do that, we have this anxiety. So if I said, oh, I had it, that alas, I have no longer, oh me, I have it again, but alas, I do not get it. Hence, he does not grieve, he is not depressed, does not lament, he does not beat his breast, nor does he weep, he no dejection befalls him. Thus, monk, is the absence of anxiety about reality in the external. More and more we think about those fast ones, fast feelings. Feeling is a really significant thing. If you are sensitive enough to your own feelings, former feelings, and in the meditation if you think about it, you can see how much of suffering you are having because you do not get those feelings you used to have. It's a massive thing. Massive accumulation of thing about the feeling. And Lord, can there be anxiety about unrealities in the internal? There can be, monk, said the Blessed One. In that case, monk, someone has this view. The universe is the self, that I shall be after death, permanent, stable, eternal, immutable, eternally. The same shall I abide in that very condition. He then hears a perfect one expounding the teaching for the removal of all grounds for views, of all prejudices, obsessions, dogmas, and biases, for the stilling of all karma processes, for the relinquishment of all the substrata, for the extirpation of craving, for dispassion, cessation, nibbana. So you can see this, remember that in the Girimananda Sutra there is this sabbaloke anubhatirat sanya. So those are the wordings over here, this adhittana, abhinivesa anuseya, those things. So Buddha is, so someone is having attained jhana concentration, having perceived that world as, you know, permanent, stable, and so on. And then he is thinking that I'll be after that, I'll be born like that one, I'll be stable and live for a long time. And then when the Buddha comes and teaches this Dhamma to get rid of all those things, saying that those things are impermanent, now his world is shattered. What he was having before is a world that he made up in his mind that I'll be born there and live. And now he get upset. So this ajjaktang, this is the internal, about anxiety about the internal. If I think that I'm going to a certain, this sort of a world after death, and I hold into that one and live accordingly and thinking about it, and if you think that world is also at the end of that, you'll be born in hell, animal realm, and so on, then and then you lose that. For a long time I grasped that one, now no longer I have any value about this. He then thinks, I shall be annihilated, I shall be destroyed, no longer shall I exist. Hence he grieves, he depresses and laments, beats his breast. He weeps and dejection befalls him. Thus monkeys, their anxiety about unrealities in the internal. But Lord, can there be absence of anxiety about unrealities in the internal? There can be, monk, said the Blessed Lord. In that case, monk, someone does not have this view. The universe is the self, eternally the same. Shall I abide in that very condition? He then hears a perfect one expounding the teaching for the removal of all grounds for views, of all prejudices, obsessions, dogmas and vices, for the stilling of all karma process, for the relinquishment of all substrata of existence, for the extirpation of craving, for dispassion, cessation, nibbana. He then does not think, I shall be annihilated, because he did not regard those other words that they are going to be born as mine, that I will be after death, live like that, so on. So, nothing is taken out of his by Buddha's teaching, because I was not grasping these things. You may well take hold of a possession, O monk, that is permanent. See the word over there. You can take hold of a possession if there is something permanent, stable, eternal, immutable, that abides eternally, the same in its very condition. But do you see, monks, any such possession? If you think that there's something like gold, for example, that this is eternal and it lasts forever sort of thing, Buddha said it's okay, you can actually keep hold of it. But Buddha does not see such a thing in the world, that you can hold it as eternal. It is, all the things are impermanent. No, Lord. Well, monks, I too do not see any such possession that is permanent, stable, eternal, immutable, that abides eternally the same in its very condition. You may well accept, the words over there is parigam, you hold it, and nicho, the permanent, sasato, aviparinamadamo. You may well accept or cling, monks, the assumption of a self theory, from the acceptance of which there would be not arise sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief and despair. But do you see, monks, any such assumption of a self? No, Lord. Well, monks, I do not see any such assumption of a self theory, from the acceptance of which there would not arise sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief and despair. So that means there is no life, no form in any of the worlds that one can actually think that this is permanent, and so you can actually grasp into that one. And having grasped, having been born there, that you would not pass away. So there is this sorrow, lamentation, pain. You may well depend or rely, monks, on a supporting view, dependency for views, from the reliance on which there would not arise sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. But do you see, monks, any such supporting for argument for views? No, Lord. Well, monks, I too do not see any such supporting argument for views, from the reliance on which there would not arise sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. If there were a self, monk, would there be myself's property? So it is, Lord. Oh, if there is a self property, would there be myself? So it is, Lord. What it means is, where there is a self, would there be belonging to myself? Where there be a self, would there be the thought belong to myself? Since in truth and in fact, self and self property do not obtain, O monk, then this ground for views, the universe is the self, that I shall be after death, permanent, stable, eternal, immutable, eternally the same, shall I abide in that very condition? Is it not, monks, an entirely and perfectly foolish idea? What else should it be, Lord? It is an entirely and perfectly foolish idea. What do you think, monks? Is corporeal reality, that is matter, permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, Lord. And what is impermanent? Is it painful? Oh, please, painful, Lord. What is impermanent, painful, subject to change? Is it fit to be considered thus? This is mine, this I am, this is myself. Certainly not, Lord. So that wording is very important. Is it fit to be considered? So Buddha is asking whether the matter is permanent or impermanent. If the matter is impermanent, so one's answer that it is impermanent. If it is impermanent, is it suffering or not? It is suffering. If it is suffering and it is changing, is it befitting to regard this as mine? If something is changing, it's a very strong statement over there. So without knowing this impermanent and suffering nature, one would be taking this one as mine. That is how the self is formed. So the all alone, you can see, it starts with the sensual desire discussion. And then regarding these things as mine, without knowing that these matter, material things are impermanent and is subject to suffering. And so one would regard, it is this regarding, the Buddha said, how this set, the formations are formed. Buddha said, one regard form as self. This regarding is a formation. If I regard something as a form, then that regarding, at that time, this sanskara come to arise. So, and then Buddha asks, so what is the root or the cause of this happening? It is this feeling come to arise and clinging to that feeling. There is this contact, the ignorance contact, Buddha said. To that ignorant contact, depending on the ignorant contact, there is this feeling. Not knowing that this is impermanent, one would regard this as mine. And having constructed, one would be happy to go in this samsara, you know, birth to birth, producing the same thing again and again. And I making my making. So the internally, the sensual desire, the I making, and the externally, the my making. And whatever thing one would make my making, even if you take food, and then you put it inside over here, right? And then this I am. So all those things come to arise. What do you think, monk, is feeling, perception, volitional formation and consciousness? The Buddha asked the same question, whether they are impermanent and suffering nature. And is it befitting to consider, this is mine, this I am, this is myself? Certainly not, Lord. Therefore, monks, whatever the corporeality, whether past, future, present or in oneself, or external, gross or subtle, inferior, superior, far or near, all corporeality should with right wisdom thus be seen as it is, thus this is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. So that one is actually the answer to that previous question as well. Why we actually cling to something? Because we have not penetrated this Dhamma by going through these 11 ways. You know, the past, future, present, and the far, near, and all those things. And similarly for the feelings, perception, volitional formation, and consciousness. Seeing thus these monks, the well-instructed, noble disciple become disgusted with corporeality, the form. Become disgusted with feeling, perception, volitional formation and consciousness. So, through this being disgusted, his fashion fades away. His fashion having faded, he is freed. In him who is freed, there is the knowledge of freedom. Ceased has rebirth. Fulfilled is the holy life. The task is done. There is no more of this to come. Thus he knows. Nibbindati is the word over there, about the form. This monk is called one who has removed the crossbar, has filled the moat, has broken the pillar, has unbolted his mind, a noble one who has taken down the flag, put down the burden, become unfettered. And how monk is that monk, one who has removed the crossbar? Herein the monk has abandoned ignorance, has cut it off at the root, removed it from its soil, like a palmyra tree, brought it to utter this extinction, incapable of arising again. Thus has he removed the crossbar. And how monk is that monk, one who is filled the moat? Here the monk has abandoned the round of rebirths, leading to renewed existence. He has cut it off at the root, removed it from the soil, a palmyra tree, brought to utter extinction, incapable of rising again. So they both are arahants. And how has he broken the pillar? He has abandoned craving, has cut it off at the root, removed it from its soil like a palmyra tree. So if the craving is gone, that means it's broken the pillar. The pillar supports something, it's no longer there. And how has he unbolted his mind, he has abandoned five lower fetters, Panchavaram, Bhagya, Sangojana, has cut them off at the root, removed them from their soil like a palmyra tree, brought them to utter extinction, incapable of arising. So over here that the five lower fetters are the sensual desire, the ill will, thought, and then the identity view, virtue and duty clinging and the doubt. So those five abandon and become never returnable. And how is the monk a monk, noble one, who has taken down the flag, put down the burden, become unfettered? He has abandoned the conceit of self, asmimano, pahino hoti, has cut it off at the root, removed it from his soil like a palmyra tree, brought it to utter extinction, incapable of arising. This is the monk, a noble one, who has taken down the flag, put down the burden, become unfettered. When a monk mind is thus freed, O monk, neither gods with Indra, nor the gods with Brahma, nor the gods with Lord of creatures Pajapati, then when searching will find on what the consciousness of one thus gone, Tathagata, is based. Why is that? One who has thus gone is no longer traceable here and now. So the Buddha's mind, where it is gone, one cannot sort of see. So teaching, so proclaiming, O monk, I have been baselessly, vainly, forcelessly and wrongly accused by some ascetics and Brahmin. A nihilist is the ascetic Gautam. He teaches the annihilation because that sensual desire, for example, people think that it is good and sort of that Buddha is destroying them. That's what they think, that he's taking it out. The destruction, the non-being of an existing individual. As I am not as I do not teach, so have I been baselessly, vainly, forcelessly and wrongly accused by some ascetics and Brahmins. Thus the nihilist is the ascetic Gautama. He teaches the annihilation, the destruction, the non-being of an existing individual. What I teach now as before, monk, is the suffering and the cessation of suffering. Dukkha. That's what Buddha teaches. Suffering and the cessation of suffering. It's not anything else. So the others are actually thinking Buddha is actually annihilist. He's removing. What is actually removing? He's removing the suffering. Suffering from people. And the and leading to the cessation of suffering. So you can see the Four Noble Truths in said in two words over there. The suffering part and the cessation of suffering. So the First Noble Truth and the Second Noble Truth comes under the suffering part. The third one and the fourth one comes under the cessation of suffering. Praise and blame. If for that reason or others revile, abuse, scold and insult the perfect one, on that occasion, O monks, the perfect one will not feel annoyance, no dejection, no displeasure in his heart. And if for that reason others respect, revere, honor and venerate the perfect one, on that account the perfect one will not feel delight, no joy, no elation in his heart. If for that reason others respect, revere, honor and venerate the perfect one, he will think, it is towards this mind-body aggregate, which was formerly fully comprehended, that they perform such acts. See that word over there? When people either blame or the praise, they all blame and praise this body, isn't it? This body, if somebody is dead, is no longer here, you know, no one is actually sort of scolding that person, right? If somebody's body is here, and one would actually say this person and so and so. And similarly, the feeling, perception, original formation and consciousness, which Buddha understood, formally understood, comprehended, that they performed. So if someone is actually blaming, it is this body and the feeling, those things are the ones that people are blaming. When they praise, it's the same thing they praise. Nothing else. Therefore, monks, if you too are reviled, abused, scolded and insulted by others, you should on that occasion not entertain annoyance, no dejection, no displeasure in your hearts. And if others respect, revere, honor and venerate you on that occasion, you should not entertain delight, no joy, no elation in your heart. In your hearts, if others respect, revere, honor and venerate you, you should think it is towards this mind-made aggregate. It is only these material things and the feeling, all those things, they do such a thing.
And if you are enlightened, you wouldn't even think about that either, is it?
Well, in their mind it straight away comes that I liberated from these things. That's the thought they get. Therefore, monks, give up what is not yours. Your giving it up will for a long time bring you welfare and happiness. What is it that not yours? Form is not yours. Give it up. Your giving it up will for a long time bring you welfare and happiness. Feeling is not yours. Give it up. The very same thing we are holding, Buddha said, just give it up. Your giving it up will for a long time bring you welfare and happiness. Perception is not yours. And then the volitional formations are not yours. Consciousness is not yours. Give it up. Giving it up will for a long time bring you welfare and happiness. What do you think, monk? If people were to carry away this is the example I was telling before, grasses, sticks, branches and leaves in the Jetha grove within the temple, you know, the grasses around it, some people take it. They burned them or did with them what they pleased. Would you think these people carry us away or burn us or do with us as they please? No, Lord. Why not? Because, Lord, that is neither ourself nor the property of ourself. It's just the Jetha grove, right? So too, monks, give up what is not yours. Your giving it up will for a long time bring you welfare and happiness. And what is not yours, and the form, feeling, perception, original formation and consciousness. The explicit teaching and its fruit. Monks, this teaching so well proclaimed by me is plain, open, explicit, free of patchwork. In this teaching that is so well proclaimed by me and is plain, open, explicit and free of patchwork for those who are arahants, free of taints, who have accomplished and completed their task, have laid down the burden, achieved their aim, severed the fetters binding to existence, who are liberated by full knowledge, there is no future rounds for existence that can be ascribed to them. You cannot actually say this person is, you know, such and such, because that they no longer exist after passing away. Monk, in this teaching that is so well proclaimed by me and is plain, open, explicit and free of patchworks, those monks who have abandoned five lower fetters will be reborn spontaneously in pure abodes. And there they will pass away finally, no more returning from that world. Monks, in the teaching that is so well proclaimed by me and is plain, open, explicit and free of patchwork, those monks who have abandoned three fetters, have reduced greed, hatred and delusion, are all once returners. And returning only once to the world, this world, will then make an end of suffering. It does not mean that once returner will be born one time. He will return to the sensual plane only once. Monk, in this teaching that is so well proclaimed by me and is plain, open, explicit and free of patchwork, those monks who have abandoned three fetters are all stream enterers, no more liable to downfall, assured and headed for full enlightenment. They are going to Nibbana. They are not going to be born in hell and so on. Monk, in this teaching that is so well proclaimed by me and is plain, open, explicit and free of patchwork, those monks who are mature in Dhamma, mature in faith, are all headed for full enlightenment. So they are Dhammanusari and Saddhanusari.
But there is no guarantee.
Well, they are heading for the enlightenment, but you know that when they go into the other ones, that I suppose they will sort of continue in that one unless there's a big coming up or something. Yeah, there's no guarantee. Guarantee has not been given by Buddha. That's the danger. But that is assuring for, you know, anyone who has not attained that. So as much as one is keeping, you know, practicing this Dhamma and has faith for Buddha, they won't be going down. But the problem will be in the future, because this Buddhism is, you know, disappearing in a rapid speed, and then you do not know. Monk, in this teaching that is so well proclaimed by me and is plain, open, explicit and free of patchwork, those who have simply faith in me, simply love for me, are all destined for heaven. That is, I remember this Pema prema mattam, that is that there is this love for Buddha, in the sense of because of the Dhamma, that if someone has got that on, they are also heading for heaven. This said the Blessed One, satisfy the monks, rejoice in the world of the Blessed One. This is a, this looks like when you read it at the beginning, it's just, you know, the sensual desire and then the views and where is Buddha heading. If someone does not actually examine thoroughly what it means, so when Buddha said something at the beginning, it is next one is related to that one. And then each one of them are related in a way. So one need to examine what's the connection. I mean, the connection is really massive in this case, because that Buddha was actually telling that monk, having that wrong view, that is creating this big problem. So if you get these views, because of the sensual desires, you get the views. When you get the views, then you go back to the sensual desire again, or go back to the ignorance. When you get back to the sensual desire, then you get the last part continuing and holding to the form, and then you are back to square one, circling like a dog binding to the through a rope. And these views are the ones that keep it going. We tolerate with the view whatever thing, these things that, although you see the impermanent thing, if someone is passing away, so you see that this impermanent nature, but for that person or something, but my view still exists. If it is existing in my mind, then I am happy to go. He is dying, I am not. So it's continuing in that. So we stop for today then.